Welcome to the Sports Zone on WHRU LP 101.5 FM, the Huntley Community Radio Station. I'm Anthony Collada. We have a lot to talk about today. Trade news. We've got signings. We've got All-Star games. We've got Huntley sports. So let's get to it. And let's start with the best thing in sports that I noticed over the last week. And I got to say that I think it was the MLB All-Star game. It started with the home run derby, and it came down to the finals of Juan Soto beating Julio Rodriguez in the finals. And Juan Soto, 23 years of age, Julio Rodriguez just 21. Rodriguez, a rookie in the league this season. Soto's been in the league now for a couple of seasons. And this was the youngest final in the home run derby of any home run derby ever. So it's a good thing for baseball when you see these young stars showing out on some of the biggest platforms. It's going to bring more attention for your fan base, and especially the younger fan bases, which is what the MLB needs at this point. Their fan base is much more into the 30s and the 40s, that it's time that they start trying to tailor these things that they're doing in the MLB towards the younger generations to try to build up that audience. And seeing two young stars up at the plate mashing home runs is not much of a better way to build your brand for the younger generation. And then you also saw a legend in Albert Pujols winning the swing-off as the 8th seed against Kyle Schwarber in the first round of the home run derby. So nobody expected Pujols to get past Schwarber. Everyone just, you know, they put Pujols in there because it's his last season. They wanted him to go out on a bang, and sure enough, he did, beating Kyle Schwarber. So, you know, you get the finals with the youngest in the derby, and then you get a victory in the first round for Pujols. So very well done by the home run derby. I know there was some talks that the pitches were being thrown too fast, and that is a problem. And I think that was the kind of problem came about when they decided to go to the clock in the home run derby as opposed to the 10-out rule. This way, they're just firing the pitches as fast as they can, just swinging. Cameras weren't even catching the balls going out or not. Fans couldn't tell if there were home runs. So the home run derby, it's still flawed in its ways, but for what it is, it was pretty good this year. And then you follow it up with the All-Star game, and with the AL beating the NL 3-2 for the 9th straight victory for the American League. And I gotta say, I have not paid too much attention over the last few years to the All-Star games. I would say baseball is one of the better ones, but it's an All-Star game, and sometimes they don't do it right. But this year, the MLB did it fantastic. They had players in the fields mic'd up. You can listen to the pitchers talking on the mound, interacting with the commentators. It was just an overall fun experience to be able to sit there and watch the All-Star game. And it was a pretty good game, too. The NL jumped out to the 2-0 lead right away with Acuna doubling and then Mookie Betts singling him home, followed up by the Goldschmidt home run. So right there, it was 2-0 for the NL. And, you know, we thought maybe this is the year that they get past the American League. But then the fourth inning came, and Giancarlo Stanton launched a 2-run home run to tie the game. And then another pitch or two later, Byron Buxton then goes yard. And that was it. That was all the scoring for the game as the American League took it with 3 runs in the fourth. And with the home run, Stanton won his MVP. So it was a good game. You know, pitcher's duel, we got to see a lot of good arms on the mound. And even got to see the ball fly out of the yard. So it was a good overall experience. But I would say the best thing that they did was miking up the players. You had them talking to each other. You had pitchers on each side of the dugouts talking back and forth. It was just an overall good experience to hear from these major leaguers what they're thinking, what's going on, how's their season, all of that stuff. So MLB did a very good job with the All-Star game and the whole All-Star weekend, in my opinion, this year. So that's kind of the biggest thing that I've kind of noticed over this last week of sports. And as we jump over to our Huntley sports, the football season, it's approaching here. We're coming up on it. Reminder that I'll be on the call for the first home game on September 2nd against McHenry. That is week two as they open their season on the road on August 26th against Crystal Lake Central. So August 26th will be week one for the Huntley Red Raiders football team. And hopefully it'll be a good, fun season for the Huntley Sports and Huntley Red Raiders. As, you know, I was there as an alumni, so obviously I'm excited to be on the call and can't wait for the season to start. And with the All-Star break, you know, now over, and we tune back into our baseball season as we start to head down towards the playoff push, and unfortunately, the Cubs are not going to be in that for you Cubs fans. But they are playing some of their better baseball right now after getting off the 9-game losing streak. The final game before the break, they come out of the break sweeping the Philadelphia Phillies in Philly. So a great start coming out of the break for them. Their first game, they won 15-2. The bats came alive. Contreras picked up 3 extra base hits over the series. Nelson Velasquez launched 3 home runs over the last 3 games. So you're starting to see some of these players maybe wake up their bats. They got a little bit of rest on the All-Star break, and hopefully they can just build momentum, find the players on their team that, you know, maybe they'll be able to bring in next year, keep around, and just see where they can fill holes for the coming seasons, because obviously this season is a lost art for them, but there's obviously always things that can be done to better them for the future. And one of those players that I am super impressed by this season is Seiya Suzuki. Since coming off the injured list, he's had 20 hits in 16 games. He's at 3 home runs, and he's batting .276 on the season now. This is the guy that the Chicago Cubs brought over from Japan. He was like the next big bat after Shohei Ohtani coming out of Japan. He won the home run derby over there. He's won their equivalent to gold gloves, so he can do it on the field. He's got a cannon for an arm, and we saw him open the season swinging a really hot stick, and then pitchers started to kind of understand what they were looking for, what he was looking for, and how to attack him. And baseball is a game of adjustments. So he came in, he was hitting the cover off the ball, pitchers adjusted. It took him a little bit of time to adjust. He hurt his hand, had to go on the IL. He's come back now, made that adjustment, and now all of a sudden he's hitting again. So that's one of those players that the Cubs have on their roster that you can be happy looking at him out on the field and expect to see him in the coming years. He came over, signed 4-year contract, so good first season for him. You want to see him continue that and finish the season off strong. They went to extra innings with the Phillies on Saturday, won that game 6-2. They put up 4 runs in the 10th inning. So that's a good sign for the Cubs, as they've really struggled in extra inning ball games this season. Just seems like they can't push that runner across. Even on second base now, they just can't seem to get any runs up on the board, and with the runner on second, it makes it so much easier for the other team. So seeing an extra innings win, seeing them even put up 4 runs in an inning was really nice for the Cubs. You know, you got to build on things. And then on Sunday, they won 4-3 with Yan Gomes putting 2 home runs out of the park. So 3-game winning streak for the Cubs as they come home for 2 games, just a short mini series with the Pittsburgh Pirates before going back out onto the road to go to San Francisco for 4 games. And, the Pittsburgh series, it's 2 bottom feeder teams in the Central. There's not going to be a whole lot there to really pay attention to, but, you know, obviously it's 2 young teams trying to find their way. So that's what they've got for them. And as with the White Sox, and we go to the South side, they split their series with the Cleveland Guardians coming out of the break. Lucas Giolito was roughed up in the first game back from the break. He let up 6 earned runs in just 3 innings of work on Friday. And then the pitching came back for the White Sox in the series as Johnny Cueto and Lance Lynn went 7 and 6 innings, respectively, during Saturday's doubleheader. Unfortunately for them, though, neither of them got their win. The White Sox ended up losing Cueto's start with Liam Hendricks blowing the save, and then Lance Lynn was actually removed from his start at just like 86 pitches or something like that. His pitch count was low. He'd only let up 3 hits, so it was a bit of a questionable move to go away from Lance Lynn at the time. We've seen Tony La Russa do this at points, but ultimately it worked out. But the bullpen did run into some trouble there, and that's the reason that Lance Lynn wasn't able to get his victory. He pitched very well, especially after struggling up to this point in the season. He's really only had a couple of good starts after coming off the injured list, so that's got to be a tough no decision for him. Hopefully that's one that he can now take with him into his next starts and try to get back to being the pitcher that he was last season when he was top 3 in AL Cy Young voting. And then Dylan Cease got the ball for the final game with the Guardians, and he did pick up the victory for the Sox with 6 scoreless innings. He did only strike out 4, not the type of strikeout numbers we're accustomed to seeing from Cease, but credit to the Guardians, they're a good hitting team. They don't strike out very much. So Cease, he didn't necessarily stick to, you know, just what he does. He pitched according to the lineup that he was going against, and he got the victory for it. Eloy Jimenez, he homered on both Saturday and Sunday, so he played a big role in both of the victories. And, you know, the White Sox, they're right there in the race in the American League Central, so this is an important stretch of games coming down the stretch for them. They're off on Monday before heading out to Colorado for a short series as well for only 2 games. And then they come back home for 3 games against the Oakland Athletics. These are 5 games that if the White Sox want to be considered a legitimate contender in the American League and even in the American League Central, these are 2 teams that the White Sox need to be able to take care of and take at least 3 or 4 games out of these next 5 in order to really just position themselves in a good spot coming down the stretch. Let's stop for a station ID real quick. You're listening to WHRU-LP 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. And we're back with the Bears news. We do have some Bears news in this offseason, as on Sunday, either Saturday or Sunday, they signed an offensive guard by the name of Michael Schofield. He's 31 years old. He was a former third-round pick of the Denver Broncos back in 2014 out of Michigan. He spent his first 2 seasons in Denver before heading over to the Chargers. And then in 2020, he went to Carolina before going back to the Chargers last season. This was a much-needed signing for the Bears. They have had a lot of question marks on the offensive line, even like over the last 3, 4, 5 years. But just going into this season, there was a lot of question marks, especially after they cut longtime starter James Daniels, who was due for an extension. They decided they didn't want to go that route, and for the longest time, it just seemed like the Bears were just going to play with a hole there on the offensive line. So they do finally go out and sign their guard, and it's a good signing. He hasn't had a holding penalty in his last 4 seasons, and so, you know, he's reliable. You can stick him in there. He's played guard. He can play tackle if he needs to. So that's going to help the Bears out a lot. And now you look at the offensive line. They've got Cody Whitehair at left guard still. He's been there for years. They just brought in Lucas Patrick, who is playing guard with the Packers. We're thinking that he is probably going to slot in at center, replacing Sam Mustipher, which is a huge upgrade. Sam Mustipher, he filled in okay last season, and I think that he'll be a valuable guy off the bench if he needs to fill in a pinch, but he's just not an NFL starting caliber center. So bringing in Patrick is going to shore that up. And then you bring in Schofield. He slots in right there at the right guard. Now the middle of your offensive line is there. You've got David Montgomery and Khalil Herbert. You've got an offense designed to run the ball. You've got a mobile quarterback. So getting the offensive line settled is a must for the Bears. So now you've got the middle. Now you need those tackles. You drafted Tevin Jenkins in the second round last season, or two seasons ago. He was hurt. I think it was last season. I apologize. They drafted him last season in the second round, and he was hurt until the very end of the season, and then he wasn't able to get time. The coaching staff decided not to play him a whole lot. They didn't know if he was a left tackle or a right tackle. Both are needs for the Bears. So I'm not sure it matters a whole lot where he goes, but as a second-round pick, the Bears need him to at least amount to be a serviceable starter, if not for the future, at least for this season, because both tackle positions are open. You've got Larry Borum, who played decently well at right tackle at times last season. So there's a couple of guys, they drafted something, but Borum and Jenkins are on the fast track to be the tackles, and if they can look good in training camp, that offensive line could hold up very nicely for Justin Fields in that running game. And speaking of training camp, I just got news right before the show started that the Bears' star middle linebacker, Roquan Smith, is going to be holding out of training camp. What this means is he's not going to show up until he gets a contract or he's traded. I'm not really sure why it's taking the Bears so long to sign Roquan Smith. I think that he's a top five middle linebacker in the NFL. He flies around. He makes a lot of tackles. He's been a leader for this defense now for 3-4 years. So I'm not sure what the Bears are waiting for. Obviously, you know, he has the full year, but now he's forcing the Bears' hands, and I think that it would be in their best interest to get him locked up for a long time. And as we hop away from Chicago, we've got some news, some pretty big news around the world or around the country, with David Ortiz being inducted into the Hall of Fame, probably the greatest designated hitter to ever live. Multiple World Series champion. He's got over 500 home runs. This was obviously unanimous and definitely the right call. He's amazing, and he had a great speech and just a good moment for one of baseball's not only great players, but just great people. He's loved by so many around the league. He's an analyst with Fox Sports. He was at the All-Star break doing ESPN. So good to see Big Poppy, you know, getting into the Hall of Fame. We all knew it was coming, and that day is finally here. And some more news around the MLB, around the Home Run Derby champion, Juan Soto. There's a lot of talks that Washington's going to trade him. Washington's a bottom feeder team. They're not going anywhere this season. Juan Soto already turned down a 14-year contract worth over $400 million. They turned that down from him. So we'll see what the Nationals decide to do with him, but it is said that haul that it's going to cost the team to trade for him is supposed to be 4 to 5 top prospects. And it's just kind of one of those trades that you wonder if it's just too big, if a team is even going to be willing to part with 4 to 5 prospects. Because you can make the argument that any of those 4 to 5 prospects can turn into Juan Soto. But just as easily as that could happen, all 4 of those prospects could also turn into nothing. And Juan Soto is already a bona fide star at just 24 years old, so he could lead your franchise for years and years. So it'll be interesting to see what the Nationals do revolving Juan Soto. And we see this in the NBA as well with Kevin Durant. Is the Nets are asking for a king's ransom and then some for Kevin Durant. There was a report that came out the other day that Boston offered up a trade for Kevin Durant with Jaylen Brown being the number one guy going back to Brooklyn. And, you know, Derek White, there's a pick or two in there, and Brooklyn turned that down. They wanted at least Marcus Smart plus, you know, they might have even wanted more. And I'm actually kind of surprised that Boston was going to be willing to part with Jaylen Brown. I mean, they just made the finals with him on the roster. They beat the Kevin Durant-led Nets. You know, they swept them. So it was a little questionable to see them offering up Jaylen Brown, because I know it was a bumpy ride there for the Celtics in the beginning, but it seems like Tatum and Brown have just really found a way to play together. And Marcus Smart is kind of that good veteran leader. He plays very good defense. He's willing to get he's a willing passer, get his teammates involved. So I'm not sure if I'm the Celtics, if I'm wanting to give up Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart. I don't know if I'd give up one of them, definitely not both. So this Kevin Durant thing, is a trade even possible? Is there a trade out there that a team is willing to give up that is going to satisfy what the Nets are looking for? And I'm just not sure. It'll be interesting to see where Kevin Durant plays next season. You know, then there's the Kyrie thing with Brooklyn. So we're now on week 4 of this trade saga, just waiting for the ball to drop. So I guess we just keep waiting until it happens, but expect something big if it does. And then we head to the NFL and some news in the offseason. 13 teams introduce alternate helmets for this season. They're going to wear these helmets on a designated game during the season. And I think it's pretty cool. The Bears are one of those teams. They've got an all-orange helmet with a blue logo that they're going to wear with orange jerseys and white pants. So it's going to be a nice, clean look. The Bears bringing back the orange. They went away for it from a couple of years, and I've always liked the orange jerseys. I think they're really clean, and just bringing out an orange helmet, something different, something to give the fans something new to look at. And I think it's a great way to promote a team and bring attention, because you're always looking for the attention. And 13 new teams with new helmets for a game this season, I'm down with it. I'm excited for it. So it'll be cool to see each of these teams introduce those and get to show it off. And as we begin to wrap up here, and we always end our show with a fun sports fact, and something that I found pretty interesting was in the All-Star game, after Shohei Ohtani led off, he got on base, Clayton Kershaw picked him off, and first of all, I got to say, I think it was a balk. Clayton Kershaw definitely did not step close, or, you know, and on the right line in order to get it to first base with the whole lefty move. But it was a good move. He got Shohei Ohtani leaning and picked him off. That was the first pickoff in an All-Star game since Carlos Zambrano did it back in 2008 as a member of the Cubs. So just a cool little moment there in the All-Star game. A good moment for Kershaw as he started at Dodger Stadium. It's his first career start of the All-Star game. I didn't realize that either, that for a pitcher who has been as dominant as he has been for as many years as he has been, I'm surprised that he never started it. But a great moment. He's having a great season. He got the start at Dodger Stadium, his home field. There was a lot of questions if he was even going to be with the Dodgers this season. You know, he's battled injuries over the last couple of years. The playoff conversation was there, but the Dodgers just kind of seemed to back off of him a little bit. They realized he can't handle the same workload that he was able to handle when he was younger. So they've started to watch his pitch count, watch his innings a little bit more, and it's really helped prolong Clayton Kershaw's career. He isn't pitching as much, but he's pitching just as, if not more effectively. He's still got a fastball that's only going to get up to about 92 now. It's not the 94, 95 that it used to be, but he's still got a big curveball. He's found a little bit of a slider and still works in that changeup. So he's still the pitcher that he was. He can't do it as much as he used to. But again, a great moment. He signed the one-year deal with the Dodgers, got to start in his home field, and just a great All-Star game, as we mentioned earlier in the show, that they MLB did it well with the mic'd up players, and it was a perfect storm for MLB this year, and I think that they have a lot of stuff that they can now take with them, not only for future All-Star games, but I think just future regular season, postseason games. Mic these players up. We want to hear what they're saying on the field. We want to hear their conversations. Alex Manoa of the Blue Jays was out on the mound, and he was a lot of fun to watch him pitch in the All-Star game, just asking the commentators, scouting reports, asking them, what should I throw here? What should I strike them out with? It just great moments around the MLB during the All-Star break, and hopefully these are things that they can now carry on with them for the rest of baseball. And with that, that is the end of our second show of The Sports Zone on Huntley Community Radio, WHRU-LP 101.5. I'm Anthony Collada, and we'll be back next week. The show airs on Tuesdays and Thursdays.